This is the Joey English Show Red Hot Treasure Chest for shows and tours.
Presented through the generosity of the Palm Springs International Airport and Daniel Meyer, go to flypsp.com. You've got passes to the Desert Rose Playhouse. I've seen some wonderful plays there. It's right downtown Palm Springs, newly renovated. You'll have a great time. And there's a bar, Joey Pals, DesertRosePlayhouse.org or 202-3000. You've got a gift certificate to JT's Diner. I'm always telling you, this is like driving down Route 66. The signs, the Coke machines, everything. The website is JTS, JT's Diner, palmdesert.com, 674-7600. You've got a gift certificate to Oscar's Cafe and Bar. They're becoming the entertainment mecca of the Coachella Valley. OscarsPalmSprings.com, 325-1188, and I'll see you there on New Year's Eve. Gypsy will be emceeing. Okay, let's see. Scott and Lee and Lisa will use Joey's three children, and Louie has, how many children do you have, Louie? One. He's got one. I've got three. We'll take the fourth caller, Joey Pals, at 323-JOEY, 323-5639. On your mark, get ready, get set, go. And if you're caller number four, I'll mail all these things out to you, and we'll see you here in January when we spin the Extreme Home Makeover Joey Edition wheel. And thank you for making this show what you have for 26 years and 76 years on the planet, or the other way around. Time for our legal eagle. Robert Firth is in the house from
the law offices of Robert L. Firth.
That's you, too. Robert L. is you.
Yeah, that's me.
That's like we post it to my website, which just happens to be. Yeah.
I have a sole practice because I've discovered in my that I do not play well with others.
I like working for myself.
Too. Yeah.
We need help. She just left. The psychiatrist, yes. The psychologist, the social worker. Come back. Yeah. Okay, ready for some Joey Powell questions?
Sure.
Okay. What is the legal perspective of air rage? Interesting. We know who you know who you are that asked that question. There's been a lot of it in the news. Is the airline at fault? Is the passenger?
The passenger is always the one at fault. I'm old enough to remember a time when you actually wore a coat and tie on a plane, and you said they also served you a meal. And it was a nice
meal. It was a nice meal.
Yeah.
Setting. And if you were in first class, it was fabulous.
Yeah. But there's something in the last few years that certain people think that they can get drunk and act obnoxiously on the plane and start fights with the stewardesses and stewards. Or they're just trying to do their job.
I think they're called flight attendants.
Yeah, flight attendants. get you seated. Let's get everybody to their destination
safe.
On time. And from a legal standpoint, it gets, and I just saw, I'm sure we all just saw the one where the guy was arrested who was fighting both the
flight attendant
and an air marshal who happened to be on the plane.
Oh, I saw that.
Because we still have air marshals now flying around.
Yes, he wasn't in uniform.
Yeah.
And he...
Yeah, the air marshals are, they're not in uniform, they're there, and I don't know what the formula is on what flights and all that, but, they're there to
prevent
hijackings and things like that. And it's an interesting legal question when you think about it, is where's the jurisdiction that the crime was committed?
Oh, my.
Because if you're flying in the air, and, are you over Kansas or are you over Missouri?
30,000 feet.
What state are you over that would have the jurisdiction over that? There are certain federal laws, anti-terrorism laws. But
wait a minute. Is rage anti-terrorism?
Not necessarily.
No, okay. I just want to understand.
I suppose if I were a creative prosecutor, I might try and craft the facts to make it happen. But that's an issue, and that's why Congress needs to act to make sure that these people, anybody who's causing a disturbance on a plane, is subject to federal prosecution with a very heavy fine. And if I were the airline,
they'd get banned.
I'd ban them for life, and quite frankly,
they've been doing that.
You'd be banned from every airline would agree that if you're banned on one plane, you're banned on all of them, because it's just. It's an outrage that people do what they do, and they just think they can behave so irresponsibly on...
And as I recall, I don't know if it was that incident that prompted this question, because there's been a little too much of it. I saw one story where the parents were thrown off because they couldn't get their son, 2-year-old, to keep the mask on. But this, the one you're talking about, was a mask incident as well, I think. Or was it alcohol?
I think it was alcohol-related because they were in the air when it happened.
Oh, okay.
And they had to make an emergency landing, I think, in Oklahoma City.
Oh, my God.
So, and that's like an extra $5,000-$10,000 to the airline to do that because you got to pay landing fees and fuel and all that sort of stuff.
You know, so will the airline come back, or will the federal government, or will Oklahoma?
Well, I can't speak. Well, the airline should sue the guy for their cost and expense. Depending on what state this incident happened, and I'm assuming it happened in Oklahoma, if that's where they had to land, the guy should be arrested and should be prosecuted for assault.
Oh, assault.
In Oklahoma, that's what he did. And even resisting, and then... attacking the air marshal, that's
got to be federal.
That's a federal offense. So he should be on, you know, some liability there, too, as they kind of sort out what happens. But, you know, the airlines don't want to stop serving alcohol on flights because they obviously make a nice revenue. And most people behave responsibly.
Yes.
But it's that 1 in 1,000, 1 in 5,000 who just decide to act irrationally. And I'm sorry, but in this pandemic era, you got to have a mask on when you're on a plane. I don't like it. I just had to take a trip to Hawaii for a...
Wait a minute. Had to take a... Are you hearing this, Nigel?
Yeah.
He had to go.
The National Association of Consumer Bankruptcy Attorneys was having their midwinter meeting, and I was forced to go. The meetings only lasted for about 2.5 days, but I went for the week.
There you go.
It's my end of the year vacation to myself.
That's right. Ho,
so,
ho, ho.
But mask on the entire way, and that's, you know, 6 hours on a plane. That's a long time, but you have to do it.
I did that, too. Okay, thanks, Joey Pal. Here's the next one. Mm-hmm. What does Robert think about all these people getting out on low bail or no bail and continuing their crimes?
Well, that's a tough issue. Because bail is, first of all, you're innocent until proven guilty. So we don't
know.
That's
important.
Yeah, so you don't know that this person has actually been convicted of a crime. The purpose of bail is to make sure you show up at, you know,
at your court date,
and that's the reason for it. But, you know, there are some people who, yeah, they're criminals, are going to do it again. In fact, I'll tell you this funny story from back when I was an assistant U.S. attorney in Alexandria, Virginia years ago.
Okay.
The District of Columbia had pretty much a no bail policy. You know, that if you were caught, you were released on your own recognizance as long as there was no evidence that you might be a flight risk. And they had one guy, and they had arrested him 5 times for knocking off liquor stores, but they were never more than 1.5 miles from his house.
Oh.
And the District of Columbia, which has very liberal rules, could, you know.
That's funny.
Yeah. But, I mean, in most states, not quite so off the chart on that, it's like, well, if we have evidence that we think you're going to do it again, like the second time, then we're revoking.
Silly you.
You're staying in.
When you got to 3, 4, and 5,
yeah,
you should have
exactly.
caught on.
But this guy, he's like every week or so or 2 weeks, he knocked off another liquor store, and it was always within walking distance to his house.
That's great.
So, and that's when you're just a little out of, you know, we've taken a little bit too
Who
far.
Who determines
the other
bail?
That is determined by the magistrate or the, you know, the judge. And every state has a different system on how they do it. But in federal court, sometimes it's a magistrate who hears the initial appearance. In other states, it's, you know, it's one of the judges. And they hear the appearance, and then they, based on what the offense is and a little bit to what the degree the evidence is and what the risk of flight is, they will determine what the bail should be. And California has a fairly, I mean, you know, high, you know, bail state. So most people, you know, you get arrested, unless you can come up with a fair amount of money, you're going to be in jail, you know, pending your hearing.
What's the timing? Say I walk out of here and I get arrested. How quickly do I have to have my bail hearing?
Well, it happens within a couple of days.
I mean, a couple of days.
Yeah, it's very
frequent. And I spend a couple of days in jail.
Yeah, you have an initial appearance.
Okay.
And it depends on the offense. In some cases, you know, they'll...
Well, make it bad.
Yeah, so it's like you've been arrested for burglary or robbery or something like that.
So they take me to jail.
They're going to take you to jail. You're going to have an initial appearance, and that usually happens within a couple of days. It depends on if you're arrested Friday night or, you know, Monday.
Oh.
You have the initial appearance where you...
You don't go right to night court?
No.
Okay.
Not that I'm aware of here, but I've never practiced criminal law in California. So you go in front of the initial judge who, you know, they present the evidence. You have you enter your plea, you know, not guilty. Typically, the judge sets bail, and then the judge sets a time for a preliminary hearing, or they might just waive that and set it to go to trial, and it depends on what kind of offense you are and, you know, what's going to happen. But usually there'll be the initial appearance, and there'll be a preliminary hearing to see if there's enough evidence to make what we call a prima facie case that the guy did it. That's just a function of the courts. And
how long do I have to pay the bail?
When he sets the bail, you're in jail till you come up with the money.
So if you pay it when he says you have to pay $5,000 bail, if you pay it right then, you can leave?
You can leave.
Oh, I see.
I mean, you go through the processing and paperwork. Yeah. And a lot of people, they'll, you know, if they own a home, then they'll go to a bail bondsman and the bail bondsman will put up the money in exchange for a deed of trust on the house.
Okay.
So that if you skip bail, the bail bondsman is
going
to take your house, which is why you never want to post bail for somebody.
So if you get out on bail or no bail,
mm-hmm,
and you continue your crime spree, who's to blame for that system?
Well, that's just part of the system.
It is.
And if you get, you know, arrested a second time, usually at that point they'll revoke bail and you'll and you will be
revoke.
They'll revoke bail and you'll be in jail until you're, you know.
Good questions, huh?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, Joey pals, we got time for one more. Let's go to the parents. This came from Michigan. We know.
Yeah.
The parents being held responsible for the crimes of their minor child, the gun that went to school and killed.
As a rule of thumb, a parent is not criminally responsible for the criminal acts of their child.
Not criminally responsible for the criminal acts of their minor child.
So a parent is not civilly liable for the tortious acts that a minor commits as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Not criminally nor civilly.
Yeah, but, you know, in the case of Michigan, this went far beyond, my kid took a gun to school and shot six people. In this case, they bought the gun for the kid.
Yeah.
They didn't properly supervise him. They left it in an unlocked drawer. And then when they brought in... He was texting something about where to buy ammo, and the mother says, "I'm not mad at you. I'm just mad that you got caught. That you next time don't get caught." I mean, personally,
wow.
I think they undercharged the parents. I would have charged them with conspiracy to commit first degree murder.
Wow.
If I were the prosecutor, I would. But I'm Michigan. They decided not to, and I'm not familiar with Michigan's criminal law statutes enough to say if that was an option or not. But in this case, the parents went far beyond saying, gee, I was negligent. I left the gun. They were supportive of him.
Got it.
And this was a kid who needed psychiatric. And the kids were the parents were in front of the school, twice in the day before, and the day before and the day of, and they just all poo pooed it, no nothing. And then that afternoon, and they didn't even bother, which is the school's fault. They didn't even bother to, check the backpack. And the parents should have said, you have permission to check the backpack.
Yes.
Because you can't just do that without some kind of cause.
Is there some criminality that the school is liable for?
The school won't be liable criminally, but the school, there's already civil lawsuits filed against them. So, you got to sort that out as to whether they were really negligent
That's so sad.
I know.
Well, finish up our time together with where you're going to spend Christmas.
I am going to spend Christmas in my house, quiet. My older son, who is up in, he's just moving into a new house in Sunnyvale, California.
Do you have three?
I have two.
Two.
And he's moving the house, so he's going to spend, he had him at Thanksgiving, so. And then my younger son is helping his mother actually move from Ohio to Las Vegas and helping her drive across. And I think I'll see him like on the 23rd sure. for a day, and then he's going to go, you know, spend
tell
Christmas
him to get us
girlfriend.
Some Raider tickets.
Yeah.
So. What do you hope to see happen with your business in 2022 in the new year?
I would like my business to continue on as before. Mm-hmm. I don't want it to get too much busier. I've been a nice steady flow of clients.
Tell everybody what your steady flow of clients.
I do estate planning, and I do a lot of living trusts. I've probably done well over 3,000 of those.
And people are doing that this time of year.
Yeah, it's like my New Year resolution. I should do it. And, you know, with COVID continuing to go on and we don't know how that's, it says, let's make sure, let's, you know, hope for the best, plan for the worst.
I think there are people who are ill and maybe going through hospice and things, they actually hang on through Christmas. Have you seen that?
Yeah, you do. And then last week I had the client came in on Monday. We were scheduled to sign the trust yesterday.
No.
Got a call on Friday from the son. He said, Dad's really going downhill. I had to make a home visit, which I do because I care about my clients.
Yes.
And we got everything signed up, and he died an hour after I left the house.
And he didn't, nobody will come back and say he wasn't himself.
No, he was competent, but he was really weak and failing.
Oh, my gosh. So. Bless your heart. You,
oh, yeah. And
you do good. Phone number right. for people.
76.
For people.
Yeah.
No, phone number for cats.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Cats, dogs. I do pet trusts in my trust. You know.
Oh,
trust,
so. I bet you do.
Yeah. 760-770-4066.
Thanks so much
and
for
I'm,
coming by.
Yeah, located in Cathedral City. Yes. Basically at De Palm and Vista Chino.
I'll put your address on the website.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you for coming right. by. Okay, Joey Pals. We talked to Scott Stretch and Lee Rice from Eisenhower Health. We had a wonderful visit with the mayor of Palm Springs, Lisa Middleton, and we caught up with our legal eagle, Robert Firth. If you like the concept of more, come back tomorrow and we'll go traveling.